Welcome to the Animal Voices Show here on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio, broadcasting live from the downtown east side in unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, November 22nd, 2013. I'm one of your hosts, Cynthia, and I'm joined here by my co-host, Allison.
Hi there.
Jackie.
Hi.
And Tim.
Hello.
Alyssa and Jenny are away today. Welcome, everyone. Today's show is about dairy calf cruelty and orphan orangutans. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and bringing you interviews, commentaries, news and events that you need to keep you up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage a movement towards a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at co-opradio.org. Our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. I'm really excited about today's show. To start off the show, we'll discuss the U.S. hunter and TV personality who has caused major controversy as pictures of her posted with a lion she killed have become viral. Our first interview is with Erica Meyer, who is the executive director at Compassion Over Killing. Compassion Over Killing's new undercover video reveals callous and egregious cruelty to dairy cows in Colorado. Just days old, many of these calves, some of whom still have their umbilical cords hanging from their bodies, are too feeble or frightened to walk steadily. As the footage shows, in the process of being moved off the trucks, these fragile animals are violently dragged by their legs, pulled by their ears, lifted by their tails, kicked, thrown, slammed, and flipped. Horrible stuff. In our second interview, we will speak with Richard Zimmerman, who is the founder of Orangutan Outreach. Orangutan Outreach mission is to protect orangutans in their native habitat while providing care for orphaned and displaced orangutans until they can be returned to their natural environment. They have several partners in Borneo and Sumatra and support different rescue and care centers. Tune in to hear about the projects that they are working on to rehabilitate these orphaned and injured orangutans and the efforts to release them into the wild as their forest homes are being destroyed at alarming rates. We'll be discussing this and more in the hour, so stay tuned. To start the show, we're going to discuss some news that has become very big international news. Minnesota-based game hunter and outdoor channel TV personality Melissa Bachman has stirred up controversy by posting a picture to Twitter of herself and a dead lion. Bachman tweeted, "An incredible day hunting in South Africa, stalked inside 60 yards on this beautiful male lion. What a hunt." Lion hunting is legal in South Africa. Safari hunting was recently outlawed in Botswana. Although the African lion is not considered an endangered species, it is still rated as vulnerable by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. There's a petition on change.org asking the government of South Africa to deny future entry to Bachman, whom it says is an absolute contradiction to the culture of conservation. The petition has more than 300 signatures so far. And Bachman has a show called Winchester Deadly Passion, and it regularly features her hunting in different locations around the world. Twitter users were quick to point out that the host has taken similar pictures with other hunted animals, including bears, alligators, and deer. I've actually seen some of those photos as well, and they're quite horrific. And there's now, so the other side of the controversy is that not everybody's angered by Bachman's photos. There's a Facebook page called Show Support for Missile Bachman and Resist Anti-Hunting Abuse that has over 3,000 users giving her a thumbs up. What are your thoughts on this topic?
So 3,000 people give the thumbs up, but only 300 people are signing
300,000. Did I only say 300?
Yes.
Sorry, 300,000 signatures.
I was surprised. I'm like, only 300 people? Okay.
Missed some zeros, sorry.
Okay, so... yeah, so she looks pretty happy when she's posing in front of all of those dead animals. And some people online have called her a psychopath. What do you think? I'm not familiar with this person. She does an outdoor show in the States. So I guess people in the States are more familiar with her. But it seems like a lot of people aren't in favor of this person just hunting for fun, because that's, from what I've been reading, that is what she's doing. Is she said, "I want to hunt a lion." And they went and found a lion out in nature, presumably. From what I read, that she could go and shoot and kill.
I'm just curious, because I know that there's lots of photos all the time posted of various people with trophy-hunted animals. And so I'm curious why, I guess because she's a TV personality, that's why this is making such big news, or... And because it's a lion?
Because it's a trophy hunt, too. Trophy
and
because,
but there's a lot of that as well. That's what I'm saying. Right. There's lots of photos.
It's not
all
usually
over.
In your face, though, so much. I don't know. But you're saying there's a lot of photos. It's usually, What?
I think it's also because she's a woman.
Yeah.
And,
perhaps.
And she's gotten, you know, and there's been some controversy as well, saying that, well, if this was a man, there'd be less controversy. I also think that if you see the photo, it's a big... beautiful lion. I think all animals are beautiful,
right.
But I think a lot of people are disturbed by seeing this ginormous lion with her standing next to it.
It was a
smiling.
big, beautiful cow, perhaps.
Yeah.
It wouldn't elicit the same kind of hatred and anger towards her.
Yeah. And then my other thing, there was a tweet which from Hillary that said, imagine if all that energy that went into getting Melissa Bachmann's show off the air went into getting lions off the endangered species list. So I also think there's a lot of effort.
On the endangered species.
On the endangered species list. Off today. Well, I'm saying the opposite. Everything I'm saying, take the opposite.
Opposite world.
Opposite world today for Cynthia. But yes, I think, you know, I think it's great that this is getting attention, but I think we need to focus on the issues that this is even being allowed to happen. They're still allowed to
have these
lions.
There's larger issues at bay, and I think that's why you wanted to bring it up here on the show, right? It's not just simply a news story. Oh, people are mad she shot a lion. It's like, what's the underlying message there?
And this happens, like you said, all the time to many different animals on a daily
And that's
basis.
How we see it, the three and four of us sitting here. It's like, what else is new? Animals are being slaughtered every day,
time.
And it's terrible. And sometimes it makes me want to kill myself, right? Oh. But, you know.
Well, she's not going to, don't worry.
But no, like seriously, it's a depressing situation, but it is, it's a little bit different when you see it from a different perspective here. Mainstream woman, she's got a TV show, beautiful lion. It kind of makes people angry from the same places where we get our anger and sorrow from.
Yeah, and she also states that she's an animal lover, which just...
Really?
Yeah.
But those people love to kill animals. That's what I call them. It's like, oh, you love to kill them. Okay.
Well, I watched a short video, and she was holding this... I think it was like an antelope. I can't remember. The one with the big horns. I'm so bad with some...
Sure.
Yes, I'm going to call it that. And she was basically saying, look at this beautiful animal, and talking about how beautiful it was. And it just was such a disconnect that she saw the beauty in this animal, yet she could still just kill it for just the purpose of a trophy.
That's what a lot of hunters claim, like they love to be in nature and they love to be around animals and wildlife.
The conservationists.
Exactly. And so, it kind of does have a level of disconnect there, like which animals are worth killing and which animals are worth observing in the wild. I don't know.
Yeah, it always goes down to speciesism and disconnect, unfortunately, with the stories that we see that make big news.
I'm always puzzled when they post pictures with, like, the larger or the older the animal, it is the more, like, it satisfies them. And I'm always thinking, well, wouldn't it be cool to let it live even longer or, like, get it... Even it's like, quick, kill it before it gets any older. It just doesn't make any sense.
It's like, look how well it survived, and now we're just going to destroy it. Yeah, it's a very sad story, unfortunately. So that's making big news, and I'm hoping that it'll help to get lions on the endangered species list.
Well said.
Roots Reggae. Heard every Friday night from midnight until daylight. 7 hours long and 7 hours strong. Giving you music for the mind, soul, and body. It's an holistic experience. We say it's idle and vital. My name is Lyndon V, and you've got it locked in Vancouver's Healing Station, 100.5 FM CFRO.
Welcome back to the Animal Voices Show. So I'm going to go through some events. We've got lots of great events. Starting off, we just found out that Ghost in Our Machine is being aired on CBC November 24th. That's tomorrow at 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So it's on CBC Doc. So look for that in your local TV listing because it's a great documentary. I think we've all seen it and we can all attest to how wonderful it is. So definitely check that out.
And usually these documentaries on CBC they're always available to view online as well. after they air live, and they usually air live twice. So if you go to cbc.ca/docs, I believe it is. I missed it this week for somehow. I get their emails, but it should be on there, and you should be able to watch it anytime on your computer as long as you're in Canada.
Perfect. I'm going to send that to some friends. That's a great documentary.
That's something really great as an armchair activist tip to post on your Facebook. Yeah. I've done that before when, like, The Cove and Forks Over Knives has aired on CBC, is post the link to your Facebook and anyone can watch it for free for a month.
Perfect. Yeah, I did that with Blackfish recently as well. So also this on next week, Tuesday, November 26th, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., we have a vegan support circle, number 4, hosted by Jackie and Alyssa from Animal Voices. So it's going to be at Eternal Abundance this time. It used to be outside, but it's gotten a bit cooler, so time to bring it inside. Eternal Abundance is in Vancouver, 1025 Commercial Street, Commercial Drive in Vancouver. If you're interested in attending and not on the mailing list, just send an email to Jackie or Alyssa, and you can send it right here to radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And also next week is another fundraiser at Gray's Vegan Restaurant in Vancouver, this time to benefit Liberation BC. It's on November 27th from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., and Gray's Restaurant will generously donate 20% of all dinner sales to Liberation BC. All you have to do is make a reservation referencing Liberation BC fundraiser and enjoy a fabulous vegan meal. To make your reservation, call 604-620-8822.
And if people don't know what Liberation BC is, they're a wonderful grassroots local group here in Vancouver that does a lot of outreach to the public on promoting vegan issues.
Yeah, and Gray's is a great restaurant, so you're getting two bonuses by eating there on Tuesday.
Wednesday. I'm going.
I'm backwards day. Sorry.
Yeah, it's opposite day.
Opposite day for Cynthia. And then there's another fundraiser this week. This is for Maya's Animal Rescue in Costa Rica. It's Thursday, November 28th from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Astorino's, which is also in Vancouver, 1739 Venable Street in Vancouver, and it'll be featuring many rad local punk bands, including Prison Violence, The Brass, and Disworship. It's an alcohol-free event, and it's benefiting Maya, who does great rescue work in Costa Rica for animals. And then also, November 30th is leafleting outside Whole Foods, right, Jackie? Is that going to happen or is that tentative?
Yes, it's still tentative.
You put a Facebook event.
But the date is still tentative.
Okay.
We're still doing some.
Okay, well, we'll post the final event on our Facebook, so you can check out our Facebook. Well,
what is it exactly for, Jackie? Yeah.
So I've seen a lot of advertising for like humane meat at Whole Foods, and it's just kind of gotten to the point where I want to spread some necessarily a protest. Just leafleting and outreach to the public, because a lot of people that go there, they go there thinking they're doing the animals a favor by buying, cage-free
eggs. As long as I shop at Whole Foods, I'm good.
Exactly. So we just want to show them that there's not really such a thing as humane slaughter or humanely raising animals.
I have a suggestion for you too, Jackie. I think you should maybe present a segment about this on Animal Voices, because we have not done anything about the humane meat myth for a long time, and it's overdue.
Okay. It's a good one, definitely. So look out for that as well. And then Nice Shoes is holding a vegan bake sale, also benefiting Liberation BC, because Liberation BC is awesome. And this one is on December 8th from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Nice Shoes in Vancouver, and their address is 3568 Fraser Street. And the proceeds of the bake sale go towards ongoing research of the dairy campaign and to assist Liberation BC on their vegan outreach. If you're able to donate baked items or any other vegan delicious goods, please email info@niceshoes.ca. Unfortunately, I'm away that day, and that day is my birthday, so it would have been perfect for me to just go on a sugar coma on my birthday at Nice Shoes. But unfortunately, I'll be on a meditation, being very silent
on that day.
And then just quickly, we have our weekly protests. We have our chicken vigils from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on Commercial Drive in Hastings Street in Vancouver. And we also have our Fantastic Friday Nights, brought to you by the Vancouver Animal Defense League, from 6:30 to 8:30, also on Fridays at the Sun Sui Wah on Main and East 23rd in Vancouver.
Great. For our first interview, we are pleased to welcome Erica Meyer of Compassion Over Killing, a national nonprofit animal advocacy organization, which is headquartered in Washington, D.C. Erica has served as COK's executive director since 2005, after being an active volunteer starting in 2000. Today, we will talk to her about a recent undercover video from inside a Colorado agribusiness facility, which reveals the cruel and inhumane treatment of dairy calves who are just days old, that Compassion Over Killing screened at a recent press conference in downtown Denver, Colorado. Welcome, Erica, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's such an honor.
For listeners who may not know, can you start by telling us a bit about Compassion Over Killing and the type of work you do for the animals?
Sure. Compassion Over Killing is based in Washington, D.C., and we have another office in Los Angeles, but we work throughout the U.S. on a national level, and we focus on exposing cruelty to farmed animals and promoting vegan eating as a way to build a kinder world for all animals. So the work that we do is a couple of different platforms. We first focus on, as I mentioned, exposing cruelty to farmed animals, and that is through active undercover investigations and a very proactive legal department, challenging not only the practices on farms, but also how those products are marketed to consumers. And then we have a very active outreach component where we reach, you know, educate consumers about where their food is coming from and empower them to make kinder choices.
Great. I wanted to speak to you today about the recent undercover video that was released by COK. Can you please describe some of the abuses that took place in this video?
Sure. To give a little bit of background information about what this facility is, the company, as you mentioned, is based in Colorado, and the facility is called Quanah Cattle Company. And this company purchases very young calves from area dairy factories, and most of these calves are male, and they're unwanted in the dairy industry because they won't produce milk. And they are often just days old when they arrive at Quanah Cattle Company. And in fact, some of them still even have their umbilical cord still hanging from their bodies. And when they arrive, because they are so young, most of them are too feeble or frightened to walk. And so our undercover investigator, while working at Quanah, videotaped using a hidden camera these animals, these newborn calves, being dragged by their limbs, pulled by their ears, lifted by their tails. They were kicked, flipped, slammed, and thrown around. And this is in the process of moving them off of the trucks into the facility where they will stay for about a week. And then just as violently as they were unloaded at the facility, they will be just as violently loaded back onto trucks about 1 week later, where they are then shipped out and will be sold and raised for their meat.
That's horrifying. Is this type of treatment legal in Colorado?
It certainly is questionable. You know, the undercover investigations that we've conducted and other organizations have conducted often demonstrate that animal cruelty is standard practice in the meat, egg, and dairy industries. And unfortunately, in the United States, when animals are on farms, the time during which they spend living on a farm, there are no federal regulations whatsoever that guide how they should be treated. So the animals on farms, there is a humane slaughter law, as it's called, in the U.S., and that's a federal law, and that applies when animals are in the slaughter process. But while they're on the farm, there are no federal regulations whatsoever about animal welfare guidelines for farmed animals. So it's up to the state to decide what's going on. And so most states, including Colorado, exempt what are known as usually common, normal, or in this case specifically, it's called accepted animal husbandry practices on farms. So we would argue that this is not accepted in terms of dairy industry standards or you know, animal handling standards in general. And a few of the experts we've reached out to agree with us on that. And in fact, the authorities in the county where this happened looked at our video, and they have charged three of the people shown in the video, these alleged animal abusers, with criminal charges of animal cruelty.
Wow. And despite that, were the actions common practice, would you say, in this type of a facility?
Well, I think it's fair to say that animal cruelty is standard practice throughout the meat, egg, and dairy industry. This type of a facility is actually relatively uncommon in the sense that most unwanted dairy calves who are taken away from their young, they are they go right directly to some place where they'll be raised for their meat. And in this case, they're being picked up, they go to a facility, unloaded, and then they stay there for a week and get loaded back onto a truck, which is not, as far as we know, not very common. And so this case specifically, I guess we'll wait to see how it plays out in court, but I think the most important takeaway for people who see this video, consumers who see this video, is that animal cruelty is simply an unfortunately standard practice throughout the meat, egg, and dairy industries. And every time we choose a meat, egg, and dairy-free meal, we can make a big difference for animals.
Thank you. That somewhat leads into the next question. So like you said, most of these calves were male, which in the dairy industry typically means that they're to be slaughtered for veal and they are a byproduct of the industry. So can you briefly share which cruel acts in the dairy industry are fully legal and commonplace?
Well, as you mentioned, in the dairy industry, I mean, cows, like all mammals, including humans, produce milk to nourish their young. And in the dairy industry, in order to maximize how much milk is produced and can be sold for human consumption, these cows are typically impregnated every year. And often on the very same day that they give birth, their calves are taken away. Which is a very painful, emotionally devastating separation for both the calf and the mother. And instead of nourishing her young, her milk is then collected to be sold for human consumption, and she'll most likely be reimpregnated shortly thereafter and starting this cycle over and over. Females born in the dairy industry are likely to join the dairy line back with their mothers once they're old enough. And as you mentioned, males, unfortunately, since they don't produce milk, they're considered byproducts, unwanted in the dairy industry. And so they're sold off to places like calf-raising companies who will raise them for their meat. And they are often slaughtered for their meat, which is marketed as veal or beef. It just really depends on how the age during which they're slaughtered is really the only difference between veal and beef. But in the end, they will be slaughtered for their meat. And so it's a very sad situation, and it's important, I think, for consumers to understand where their food is coming from and why undercover investigations are so vital, is to let consumers see inside these facilities, because animal agribusiness is so eager to keep these images, this painful reality, hidden from consumers.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with you on that. And what this kind of goes into, what kind of response did you receive from the public regarding this video screening? What was the impact?
It's certainly very saddening. We've gotten a lot of calls and a lot of emails, primarily emails from people thanking us for exposing this and expressing concern for these and other animals on farms and the suffering that these animals endure behind closed doors. And I think it opens people's eyes. It's hard to see. There's no doubt that this is very, very heartbreaking and disturbing footage. We encourage people to watch it so they have information that will enable them to make more informed choices in the marketplace. And if it is something that is so hard and too hard for us to watch, I think it's important to ask, is that something that we want to support? And there are so many options available today, so many meat, egg, and dairy-free options that we can choose in grocery stores and restaurants everywhere, that it's never been easier to choose compassion than it is right now.
I think that's a lot of what people are kind of, fed to believe by the dairy industry since childhood, is that it's necessary and that it's totally humane. Like, most people don't know what goes on in the dairy industry, so it's great that these videos can be exposed. And in the U.S., with the recent egg gag bills being passed in a few states, making it basically a terrorist act to conduct undercover investigations in these facilities, I'm deeply concerned and horrified that these places will continue to go unmonitored and therefore the abuse will remain hidden from the public. What can citizens do to fight the bill or help prevent it from being passed in their state?
That is a really important topic. I'm glad that you brought it up. I mean, these whistleblowing exposés are the only glimpse the public will ever see of the systemic mistreatment of farmed animals. And the industry, rather than trying to prevent the abuses being documented, by and large, the industry is working hard to prevent consumers from finding out about them through what are referred to as ag gag laws. These laws are designed specifically, or the bills, I should say, are designed to criminalize undercover investigations. And the most important thing that people can do across the country, whether or not a bill has passed in your state, whether or not a bill is pending in your state, or whether a bill has even never been introduced in your state, the most important thing that people can do is to share these videos, because it's exactly what the industry is trying to suppress through these ag gag bills, is trying to prevent people from seeing these images and these videos and the reality behind closed doors. And so each one of us can share these videos, get the information out there so consumers have it, because that's exactly what the industry is trying to stop us from doing.
Erica, how is it that CLK then and other organizations such as Mercy for Animals, how are you able to get past that ag gag? Or is it not in that, I guess it's not, hasn't been passed in that state? Is that the case? And is that why you're able to pursue these undercover investigations?
Right. Ag gag bills have been passed in a few states. Mm-hmm. And they are certainly, they were introduced in 11 states throughout 2013. And in this year, they were mm-hmm. all killed. So right. there is certainly the expectation that they will come back. These bills will be introduced in probably those same states where they didn't pass this year, and more than likely to be introduced in even more states as these powerful videos are getting out there and they are getting attention nationally. They are certainly, consumers are certainly outraged when they see the violence that these videos are exposing. And so, there's never been a more important time to support undercover investigators, to support these investigations, and to share the footage that these videos, the footage that are being gained from these undercover investigations.
Great. And how can people support or get involved with Compassion Over Killing?
Great question, and I hope that your listeners certainly will. Our website is probably the best way to get in touch with us. It's cok.net. And on our website, you can reach us directly. You can connect with us on Facebook or Twitter. You can visit our YouTube page where all of our videos are. We definitely encourage people to get involved. Contact us if we can send any materials or if you just have questions. We love working with activists everywhere, and I hope people will be more eager to learn about our organization and get more active for animals.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today, Erica, and speaking to the horrific cruelty that takes place in the dairy industry and the important efforts that we need to really get out there.
I am absolutely glad that you gave me this opportunity to talk with so many of your listeners.
Oh, you're welcome.
Erica Meyer is the executive director of Compassion Over Killing, and we reached her in her office in Washington, D.C.
You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I have some headlines to share. You probably all heard about the horrific story that came out in the news this week. This happened on Wednesday here in Vancouver. A pit bull in Kitsilano Beach Park was killed. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
It's all over the news.
Yeah, it's been all over the news. It's made the national news, in fact, and I guess it really does pull on people's emotions, and that when one of our fellow companion animals are brutally murdered in a park, in broad daylight, I believe. So what happened was a friend of a woman named Samantha Fairbridge, her friend Lindsay Harkonnen, she was walking Pandora, this beautiful black pit bull there's a picture on Facebook of this beautiful pit bull kissing the 4-year-old daughter of her guardian. So anyways, they were walking in the park, the pit bull was on leash, and a pug dog who was not on leash came running over and approached the pit bull Pandora, and Pandora attacked the pit bull, apparently bit her on the ear, and then her guardian, a 72-year-old man, came over and tried, they tried to get them apart, but they could not get them apart. So the guardian of the little pug dog, his first reaction was apparently to pull out a knife and yell at Pandora, "You effing B-I-T-C-H, you deserve to die," and then stabbed the dog with a knife that he had on him. It was apparently a switchblade. And that's what happened. So apparently he stabbed her. This is what reports are saying. I've been reading quite a few reports about this, and details are varying quite slightly. Apparently he stabbed her once or twice. They're not sure. And then Pandora broke her grip, the pug dog. I don't know what the pug dog's name is, mm-hmm. and whether the pug is a he or she. But then he kept continuing to stab her, and apparently stabbed Pandora up to 10 times. So there is going to be a necropsy happening by the BCSPCA to investigate this issue as to how many times. I guess that is an issue, is, you know, why stab the dog so much? The man killed Pandora. And so now a family is left without a dog, and there are many issues that have been brought up in the news about this story. Issues are, why was the pug dog not on leash? Although I do believe from what I've read, it wasn't a part of the park that is necessary to leash your dogs, but the guardian of Pandora is saying if the pug had been on leash, this would have never have happened, right? Because that would be the first preventative measure. And in fact, the spokesperson from the BCSPCA is saying, well, there's nothing really that I can suggest that they could have done to actually intervene while it was happening. The best method is actually prevention. And this also brings up other issues. Also, what has been brought up is the owner of Pandora and her friend were saying, we were doing everything right. You know, the dog should have been on a leash. It's brought up the issue of, should pit bulls be banned like they are in Ontario? What do you think? Is it necessary to ban a breed, or do you need to keep your dogs under control? What do you think?
So my thoughts are, the media loves when pit bulls get into fights because it always makes the news.
It's always a story, yeah.
But, you know, dog fights happen all the time. They're very rarely fatal. The reason that this made news was, first of all, because the dog's a pit bull. Second of all, because the man killed the dog. I don't think that pit bulls necessarily need to be banned. Maybe people need to be better educated about this.
Right, and just in case people are wondering, the injured pug dog, he or she was rushed to a nearby veterinarian hospital where he or she received stitches for wounds on his or her neck. So she's apparently okay. So I will leave that there. We have other news to cover. This is big news this week: Canadian medical schools and the use of live animals. So another two Canadian universities have agreed to stop using live animals in trauma medicine training courses, which marks the end of the practice completely in Canada.
Yay!
A little applause there. Doctors and other trauma trainees at Quebec's University of Sherbrooke and Sacré-Cœur Hospital in Montreal have been practicing on human-like computerized simulators instead of pigs or dogs. And we featured information on this show before if people want to. It was Dr. Berville, is that correct?
Yes.
Olivier Berville, if you want to look that up on animalvoices.org on a previous show that we did this year. So this means that none of the 22 Canadian universities and hospitals that offer the Advanced Trauma Life Support Program uses animals any longer. Dr. John Pippin, who's a spokesperson for the Physicians Committee of Responsible Medicine in Washington, D.C., he said, we're confident that now Canada, bless them, is leading the way. So how about that? We're leading the way in something to do with animals. The changes to the trauma courses have been controversial, however. McMaster University in Hamilton made the switch last year, complaining that many of the students felt that the simulators were a lesser option and that the new policy came only after, this is in quotes, threats from the PCRM. The university's veterinarian also noted that the conditions under which pigs had been treated, including being anesthetized while trainees operated on them and killed before regaining consciousness, were far more humane than that of hogs slaughtered for meat. neat.
So that doesn't really say much to us.
Is that a fair point to make? I don't know. I just had to bring that up. It's part of what has been presented in the news, and it's quite laughable, I think. The University of Sherbrooke did come under pressure from the PCRM to abandon the use of animals in training, but ultimately made the decision as part of a broader move to employ simulators. So that's that, and that's our headlines for this week.
Awesome.
Thank you for that, Allison. So our next interview is with Richard Zimmerman from Orangutan Outreach. Richard Zimmerman is the founding director of Orangutan Outreach, a New York-based nonprofit organization whose mission is to save the critically endangered orangutans and protect their rainforest home. Richard has raised well over $1 million for orangutan conservation and made a significant difference in the life of orangutans. In subsequent years, he has expanded Orangutan Outreach to work with an increasing number of partners in Borneo and Sumatra, including the Borneo Orangutan Survival Foundation, International Animal Rescue, the Center for Orangutan Protection, and the Sumatra Orangutan Conservation Program. Hello, Richard, and welcome to the show. Hello, Richard. Oh, I'm sure we'll have him on in a second.
Oh. I'm just going to try to call him again.
Okay, no worries.
Great.
So, Richard will be on shortly talking about, we can actually cover another news story because we had more.
So, sure, I do have more news to cover. So, another undercover investigation. There's been a couple, like these are coming up all the time. There was a COK undercover investigation last week on the dairy cows. This week, Mercy for Animals, another national nonprofit in the U.S., which also has a chapter now in Canada. They broke an undercover investigation this week. So a shocking undercover video was released and has allegedly exposed rampant animal abuse at a farm in Oklahoma that supplies pork to Tyson Foods, the nation's largest meat producer. This footage, which was released by Mercy for Animals, shows workers punching, kicking, and beating animals at West Coast Farms in Okfusie County, Oklahoma. Interesting correlation, huh, Jackie? This is just what we were talking about in Erica's interview, is it's the same old thing, is these animals are being abused. It keeps happening no matter which random facility is targeted by these undercover investigators. So that's an interesting story, but we shall move on to our interview.
Yeah, I think we have Richard from Orangutan Outreach back on.
Apparently not. I'm going to try it again.
Okay, well, let's keep going. Let's keep talking about that, the story. So, yeah. So, this video also shows sows confined to gestation crates, workers gouging pigs' eyes out, and an incident where an employee throws a bowling ball at an animal's head. Disgusting. Wow. Tyson Foods, which supplies meat to Walmart. Now, I don't know if people are like, we don't have Walmart too much of a presence in Canada. And
we
I
have
know
a
that.
Few.
We do. Yeah. We do. It's not so much, I mean, can you buy groceries at our Walmarts? I'm not sure, because it seems to be quite a prominent grocery supermarket in the States. And I have been to a supermarket Walmart in the States before, and you can buy everything there. So it seems to me that Walmart is, especially in the United States, is a place that you can people are definitely buying their groceries for. It's known to be, you know, cheap food, and Tyson Foods, it's supplying meat. So this Tyson Foods supplies meat to Walmart. They responded almost immediately after the video was released on Wednesday. I'm sure they're pretty used to this by now, because MFA does have a campaign against Walmart and their meat suppliers. And apparently Walmart has terminated their contract with the farm, according to an investigation by NBC News. And a spokesperson for Tyson Foods also said, "We're extremely disappointed by the mistreatment shown in the video and will not tolerate this kind of animal mishandling."
Okay, I think we have Richard Zimmerman on the phone now. Hello, Richard.
Yes.
Yay.
Hello.
Hello, you're here. Wonderful. Should I call you Rich or Richard?
Rich, please.
Please.
Is fine. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, welcome to the show. So as I mentioned, I gave a little preview of about yourself, and so you're from Orangutan Outreach. So can you tell us about Orangutan Outreach? How long has it been around, and how did it start?
Okay, well, I started Orangutan Outreach back in 2007, so we're about 6.5 years old. We're based in New York, and basically from the beginning, what I've done is link up with projects on the ground in Indonesia that are rescuing and caring for and ultimately releasing orangutans back into the wild. So we have quite a few partners now. and we work in both Indonesia, in both Borneo and Sumatra.
Perfect. That's great. So can you explain to viewers who may not know, although it is quite big news, how palm oil affects orangutans? And please touch on the other industries as well that are threatening the wild orangutan populations.
Wow. Well, it's been catastrophic. I think that's a good operating word to start with. And what's happened over the last decade is the palm oil industry has spread at a rate that's just incredible. And this is in conjunction with the timber industry and the mining industry and other industries in Indonesia. And what's happened is you've had timber companies go in and knock down forests at a rate that's estimated to be 6 football fields a minute by the UNEP. And this has been primarily in Borneo, which is called Kalimantan in Indonesian, as well as Sumatra and Papua and a few other smaller islands. And what happens is the timber industry extracts all the high-end timber, all the big trees, and then what's left is essentially burned down. And then that land is converted to oil palm plantations. And it's at an industrial scale for the most part. You know, there are some, you know, smaller family-owned plots, but we're talking huge, vast plantations that just go on for miles. And it's not an indigenous crop, so after a few crop cycles, basically the land will be dead. Wow. And in the meantime, all the biodiversity has been wiped out. People have lost their land. And the carbon being emitted from these peat swamps and just in general from the deforestation has led to a situation in which Indonesia is the third highest carbon polluter in the world after the U.S. and China. And it's not even really an industrialized country. You know, obviously it has big cities and plenty of industry, but it's not a consumption society the way the United States is, for instance, or to a much lesser extent Canada. Mm-hmm. So the carbon coming up is just insane.
Wow, and I'm surprised there isn't more focus on it. The orangutans is starting to become known, but with the carbon as well, it sounds like a major issue. That's insane. Can you explain why there are so many orphans? Like, how do the orphans come about? I've read this, but I'd like you to explain how the mothers are killed and the machetes that are used.
Oh yeah, it's really ugly. Well, basically, when the forest is cut down, everything that can be utilized is in terms of products. And animals are taken out that can be that are used for wildlife smuggling, basically. Some of them are sent up towards China for medicinal reasons. And body parts and such. Others are part of the illegal pet trade. And this is really the situation with orangutans, in that the babies are very cute, obviously.
They're super cute.
They're too cute for their own good. And basically, it's illegal for anyone to obviously buy or sell an orangutan or own one or even have one in Indonesia, let alone abroad. And this almost increases the need or the desire to have them as a prestige trophy pet. And what happens is the adults are killed on site, sometimes often eaten, and the babies are taken from their mothers. And a mother orangutan is going to defend her baby with her life, and that's ultimately what happens. And you'll have situations where they're literally clinging to life in the last standing tree in a forest, or what was a forest, until they're shot. And then the babies are literally taken off them, and the orangutans have very strong grips, and it's a biological thing because they live in the trees, and the babies really just grasp onto their mothers for the first few years of their life, essentially. And they don't let go. And it's horrific, but it's not an exaggeration that what often happens is the mother falls from the tree after she's shot, and the baby is literally cut off her, or the baby or the mother comes down alive and she fights, and people will just literally hack the baby off. And we've had situations where you have orangutan babies without hands, you have them with their fingers cut, you have, there's one at one of the centers we support named Rikina who had a machete gash in her head.
Oh my gosh.
And it's just horrific, the suffering these little creatures go through. And what happens is they're then confiscated, and some are kept locally as pets, some are sold to wealthy people as pets. Often corrupt lawmakers and police have them as pets. Or they're sold into the international trade, which is all illegal. And there's smuggling routes out of Indonesia from the interior to the coasts through Malaysia and beyond.
Wow. And how are you, your partner organizations able to rescue them from this trade, from the pet trade and from the meat trade? And how do you get them?
Well, we have teams and partners on mm-hmm. the ground, essentially. And some of these partners are bigger and maintain care centers. Borneo Orangutan Survival Foundation is one, International Animal Rescue, the Sumatran Orangutan Conservation Program. These maintain big centers. And then there are smaller organizations that are more activist, to go out into the field and protest, like the Center for Orangutan Protection, or COP, as they're called. Mm-hmm. And we have networks of people through our partners that know where the smuggling routes are, that know where the animal traders are. And, you know, some of it's done just in the open, in the big animal markets of Indonesia. But basically, our teams will work with the authorities whenever possible, because it's always better to do it with the government, to rescue the orangutans from the smugglers or from the situations in which they've been held as illegal pets. You know, many of these, you know, they were confiscated when they were little, and they've grown up. And when they're big, you know, once they hit puberty, they get a little more wild. Mm-hmm. And the teams often get calls to come and get them. So there's a lot of different ways that we find out about them.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, they're cute babies, and I think they're cute throughout their whole life. I can imagine as they get older that they get a bit large, and, you know, the whole idea of having them as a companion animal, or, you know, or they say as a pet is just, you know, I could see them being like, okay, well, they're not as cute anymore, and letting them go. I've also read on your website, I think it was, that we're losing 3,000 orangutans a year. Do you know how many are left, and how many are in some of the sanctuaries and rehabilitation centers?
Well, that's an estimate. Mm-hmm. That's the number that's been used as long as I've been doing this. You know, there's probably some fluctuation in that in terms of whether it's 3,000 or more or fewer. As well as the numbers themselves. Remember, the orangutans are only in two places, Sumatra and Borneo. In Sumatra, it's estimated that there's maybe 6,500 left.
Oh my gosh.
And in Borneo, estimates range from 35,000 to 45,000. But just to clarify with the numbers, in Sumatra, it's really horrific because the forests that are left where they can live or where they're living now are shrinking at a rate. And when I say shrinking, I mean being destroyed mm-hmm. and burned down. The rate is unprecedented, and they're literally running out of space. And there have been a lot of cases in the last year or two where the palm oil companies were caught burning down the forests. And these are national park areas. These are lands that are not supposed to be touched. The indigenous people live there, but their rights are just stripped from them by mafias and palm oil companies, often working together. But then back in Borneo, it's a bigger island. It's about the size of Texas. Mm. And you have many subspecies throughout the island. And within the subspecies of Bornean orangutans, you have different populations. And those populations are being cut off from one another. So basically what's happening is you're looking at a potential genetic collapse. You need about 250 to 300 individuals to keep a clean gene pool. And that's part of the problem is that the numbers are shrinking, so they can't maintain themselves in the long term. So people talk about, imminent extinction. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as there's a forest with an orangutan in it where there's no people, they'll be fine. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that's becoming a rarer situation.
And your mission is to protect the orangutans in their natural habitat while providing care for orphaned and displaced orangutans until they can return to their natural environment. Well, we were just talking about how their natural environment is being destroyed. So you partner with organizations that are currently returning some of these orangutans back into the wild. Can you explain a little bit about this project and talk a little bit about the forest school and how the orangutans that are in the wild, how they're doing?
Okay. There's a lot there.
Yeah, no, that's a lot. Sorry. Just an interesting topic.
Yeah. Okay. Where do you even begin? Well, with different partners, they're at different stages of the rescue versus rehabilitation versus release for the orangutans. So I can just touch upon how some of them are faring. The organization we started working with in the beginning, it's called BOSS, Borneo Orangutan Survival Foundation. And they have a massive center in central Kalimantan, central Borneo. And this is the one that's been featured the most in the media.
And that's the one that has a documentary on BBC, The Great Escape?
Yes, yeah. Precisely. It was started by a woman named Lone Drescher Nielsen, originally from Denmark. And it quickly grew, unfortunately, for better or for worse, to a center with upwards of 600 orangutans in it. This is well over a decade old at this point. It's been featured in Orangutan Island, on Animal Planet, on Orangutan Diaries, on the BBC and PBS in North America, mainly in the United States, but we've gotten lots of attention from Canadian cities that have access to it on television from our stations in the U.S. Basically, that center got to the point where the babies, hundreds and hundreds of babies who had been rescued, were growing up and getting big and hitting puberty and getting strong. And they were all caged, and that's nothing we ever really want to deal with. No one wants to have animals in cages ever. But finally, last year, BOSS was able, with all the partners raising funds and awareness, BOSS was able to secure some land deep, deep, deep in Borneo, far from people, that could be used as a release site.
Amazing.
And in the last, let's say, over a year, summer of last year it started, they've been able to release over 100 orangutans into that area. And they're doing well. There's been one death, but the others are all doing well. There have been births already.
Wow.
So we're looking at a scenario that provides hope for the orangutans as a species, because they're looking to literally recreate or create a sustainable population.
That's
really, that's the most we can hope for at this point.
Exactly.
To get them out. And these are rehabilitated orangutans who, may or may not know how to survive in the wild. But so far, so good. And it's an ongoing process, and there's more scheduled to be released by the end of the year. And you can learn all about this on our website at redapes.org/release. To see video and pictures of who's going out. And it's just a logistical, a logistical challenge, I guess.
Yeah, I saw
it.
The video of them helicoptering these big crates with these orangutans in them. It's quite amazing.
We'll call it a logistical nightmare.
Yeah, it looked really like a logistical nightmare. But it's an amazing, there's amazing videos on your website, so I definitely recommend people to check it out and to check out that BBC documentary, which is great. I've just caught the first half of it, but it's wonderful.
Yeah, we only have links all over.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. We only have a couple minutes left, so I just wanted you to talk about your organization and how you have your Adopt Orangutan program. How can people participate in that, and how else can people help the orangutans?
All right. Well, like many nonprofits, really the most important thing is raising funds for the projects in the field. And the one thing we've been doing from day one is an online adoption program where people go to our website, and they select an orangutan, and right now I think we have about 10 of them on there, and we're about to, I'll give you a scoop here, we're about to add two more.
Perfect.
And people adopt them online. Everything is handled online. We don't ship anything, no paper. We don't like to waste any resources.
Perfect.
And these are orangutans being cared for at the rescue centers. And we have updates quarterly, two to three times a year at least, with photos and blurbs about how they're doing. And these funds go to sustain the centers where the orangutans are being cared for. We have three centers we're working with now. The one I mentioned earlier, Bosnia Rumenteng, which is the one with about 600 orangutans. Mm-hmm. We also work with IAR, that's International Animal Rescue's Ketapang Center, and there's about 80 of them there now. And then the third one is up in Sumatra, where we're helping build a new sanctuary for orangutans who will never be able to be released because they're either injured or blind or too acclimated to humans, or there won't be any forest left. So that's another project where you can adopt the orangutans, and now those funds go to support the project.
That's wonderful. That's actually how I heard about you, because somebody had posted an Adopt Orangutan link on their website or on their Facebook, and I thought that was really interesting. So I'm really glad you're on the show. Thank you so much for being on the show. And if you want to learn more about how to protect the orangutans in the forests, please visit redapes.org to adopt orangutan of your own. And that was Richard Zimmerman from Orangutan Outreach calling us from New York City. Thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you so much.
Nice chatting with you.
My pleasure.
You too. Bye.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, broadcasting live from the downtown east side in Vancouver, unceded Coast Salish Territories, Cascadia. Please join us next Friday at noon, that's November 29th, for our dog rescue show. If you enjoyed the show and want to keep connected with us, you can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or via email or Twitter. Also, please do check out our website, animalvoices.org, where our shows can be downloaded from. We are closing the show with the song We Shall Overcome by Austrian artist Gustav. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Dear fellow occupants, dear sisters in brave, and dear comrades in arms, we might say, attempted to follow, yes sir, straight line, my share of the blame, gotta say I deserve, I believed in their lies, I believed in their lies, when all of the beauty seemed just to be wrong, and all of their wording seemed to belong to their everyday Prozac, their everyday light, at their everyday banging in my day-to-day shopping malls, we are pre-rendered dolls, educated for the system, cultivated, liberalized, and ready-made, and Hollywood movie-sized. We all are invited to that big bingo show, we dance to the music from all